Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time, a special bonus episode for this week. Mike Innes and I, John Steele's schedules combine quite well this week, so we're going to run through a J3 pod. So instead of the J-Talk Short Corner with Mike flying solo, Mike and I are going to talk about the round 3 J3 action from last weekend. Mike, how are you doing? You alright?
Yeah, I'm doing great, John. Yeah, thank you very much. And great to have the chance to talk about J3.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for agreeing to talk to me again on consecutive days, Mike. I realise that's quite the sacrifice to benefit the listeners, but hopefully it's worth it, and we come out of it feeling good about ourselves. I think the J Talk Short Corner segment's been really well received, Mike, for the first two rounds of J3. But we have a chance now to get together and kind of bounce some ideas off each other about what we've seen in the first three rounds. Before we talk about any of the on field action from the weekend's J3 games, Mike, I know that you like to start the short corner with some kind of news topics, and I know that you have one or two lined up. So please give us the J3 news that you've picked up this week.
Sure, yeah, thank you, John. Just a quick kind of like a roundup, and it sort of like follows on from bits and pieces that I've mentioned on J-Talk Short Corner. First of all, I should go back to FC Imabari and say that they've confirmed that forward Leo Mineiro will need surgery on an ankle fracture, which he sustained in the round 2 game against Numazu, an incident that I mentioned in that last episode. And the club have estimated that the required rehabilitation time is about 6 months. So a very sort of sad story there at Imabari. But in the meantime, they have signed two foreign players. On a permanent transfer is Valdemar Augusto Te. He's going to be known as Valdemar. He's a 23-year-old forward from Guinea-Bissau, and he's most recently been playing for the club Amora in the Portuguese third tier. There's also a Panamanian defender, Oscar Linton. He's 28, joins on loan from Costa del Este in Panama, although his most recent playing time seems to have been late last year at Sliema Wanderers in Malta. A couple of other slightly eye-catching transfers to mention. Fukushima United have signed 31-year-old Shoma Kamata. He was the first choice left back at Blaublitz Akitel last season. He's got J1 experience from Shimizu and Shonan. He was the only regular starter to be released by Akita. On the face of it, it's a bit surprising that he hasn't been picked up before now. I wonder why that might be the case. He did go straight into the Fukushima first team as right back in Sunday's game at Kagoshima, but one to keep an eye on there. And last of all, AC Nagano Parseiro have signed a young Korean goalkeeper, Kim Min-ho, on loan from Sagan Tosu. That makes Kim the fifth keeper in Nagano's squad. Is that a J3 record? It sounds like it to me. With rookie Soki Yatagai is currently top of the pile and performing well. So that's the roundup of the kind of news stories that I have, John.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mike. Five goalkeepers for a 28-game season. I suppose you can't be too careful these days, can you? And sad news about Leo Mineiro. That injury did look very nasty, didn't it? Just the way he fell and kind of the way that his ankle kind of buckled under his weight. So yeah, I hope we see him back playing soon. Yeah, maybe we should move on and talk about some of the on-field action from the weekend, from round 3. Just looking at the kind of very early league table, Mike, it's FC Gifu who are top of the pile after 3 rounds. They've taken 7 points from a possible 9 available, including 3 points on Sunday. They hammered Sanaki 4-0 at a very wet Nagaragawa Stadium, didn't they? The visiting goalkeeper Kenta Watanabe almost handed Gifu the lead in the 6th minute here. His clearance went straight to Ryohei Yoshihama, who hit the post from about 25 yards with the goal gaping wide open. It was just a temporary reprieve for a pretty woeful Sanaki, though. Gifu were ahead in the 11th minute when Haruki Mitsuda scored with a thumping header from a Yoshihama free kick. It was 2-0 in the 25th minute, the goalkeeper Watanabe making another mistake, passing the ball straight out along the floor to Shota Kawanishi, who beautifully advanced and dinked the ball over the goalkeeper for 2-0. In my notes, my topical reference, I've just written Doe as a homage to Homer Simpson for that one. The rain intensified in the second half of this game, but it didn't really deter Gifu. They kept going. Kawanishi headed in the third goal from a deflected cross just before the hour. No reaction from any Saneki defenders or the goalkeeper on this one. Quite a strange strategy. And in the 64th minute, Toma Murata hooked in a brilliant fourth goal from, I think it was Tetsuya Funatsu who provided the cross. So 4-0 it finished. Gifu are going well, and obviously they still have Yosuke Kashiwagi to come into the side as well soon. Sanuki bottom of the early table, two defeats from their first two matches and no goals scored yet. What did you make of this game, Mike?
The game itself, yeah, it was pretty much as one-sided as you could wish to see, really, wasn't it? A couple of items on the J3 bingo card, as you mentioned, a Gifu home game in the absolute pouring rain, and especially for our good friend Johnny Nichols, some comedy blunders by a J3 goalkeeper, in this case, Kenta Watanabe from Saneki. So in terms of Gifu and how they're kind of coming into the season, they've switched to a three-back system under Takeyoshi Anma, and they've introduced quite a lot of new players into the team, including, as you've just mentioned, Tetsuya Funatsu. He's come from Gunma, and he had a very good game against Saneki. There's also playing at left back, Haruki Mitsuda, who's come from Matsumoto, and the goalkeeper from Kashiwa is Kasushige Kirihata. They started the season, as Richie said on the pod a couple of weeks ago against Hachinohe, a very, very underwhelming kind of 0-0 draw. Then in round two against Fujieda, that was much, much brighter. Kensei Nakashima had a really good game, but has picked up an injury and so was out for the Seneki match. But it was such a comfortable win, wasn't it? 4-0, and it means that the Saneki game, when combined with the other two fixtures that Gifu have had, it means that I don't think they can really say that the defence has been tested. They've played, I would say, three of the kind of the weaker teams in the division. I think that Fujieda don't look as if they're going to be too great this year. So there's more to know, I would say, about Gifu. With Saneki, I don't know how you're feeling about our poor old Kamatamare, John. I mean, we had doubts, didn't we, in the pre-season about their new coaching arrangements, where the guy who was the general manager last season, Nobuyuki Uenoyama, is now the joint general manager coach, and that seems, you know, organizationally, that seems to be an increase in his workload. Saneki have only played two games so far. They're one of the teams who've had a bye, and the worries that we had look pretty justified. They played round one against Nagano and really looked weak, and the Gifu game, there were two big mistakes by Watanabe, and again they really didn't have anything in front, even though last season's top scorer Kentaro Shigematsu came back into the team. Just the spine really looks weak. We kind of need to see them against one of the teams from the bottom half of the division, because they've only played against Nagano and Gifu. But it doesn't look as if there's going to be any improvement this year for Seneki. It looks as if it's going to be a tough season again.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about which team from the bottom half in the 2020 standings might kind of rise up, and be a challenger for promotion this year. I think we talked about Saneki in that conversation kind of by default, didn't we? But yeah, they don't look anywhere near challenging the top. And I think, yeah, maybe even the top half of the table looks beyond them. But yeah, I think you're right to point out it's only two matches for them. You know, J3 has the odd number of teams, doesn't it, this season, 15. So while most teams have played three matches, matches. Saniki have only played two, but yeah, the early signs not encouraging at all. They're too easily beaten, aren't they? They're very, very kind of powder puff in defence and attack. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see, but so far so good for Gifu, I would suggest.
Just before John edits this episode, an extra breaking news story to drop into the mix, with apologies to you listeners for the sore throat that's hit me since the main recording. After only two games in charge, Nobuyuki Uenoyama has quit from his dual role as coach and general manager at Kamatamari Sanuki. Uenoyama in 2020 was working as the club's general manager, but during the closed season took on the extra responsibilities of coach in spite of his lack of experience. Regular listeners will know, John and I were doubtful about the wisdom of this appointment and indeed about the club's overall management strategy. On the pitch, the 2021 season has got off to a difficult start for Sanuki, who prior to Uenoyama's departure had lost 2-0 to Nagano and 4-0 to Gifu. But even so, a resignation after only two games is a shock and, if they weren't already, puts Kamatamari Sanuki firmly in the category of crisis club. Toshihiro Nishimura, who over the last few seasons has worked variously as Sanuki top team coach, top team head coach, and most recently top team director, was placed in temporary charge for the round 4 game against Fujieda My FC this weekend. The club say they're looking to replace Uenoyama on a permanent basis as soon as possible. So this looks like a story with legs, and you can be sure we'll follow it on J-Talk Extra Time and Short Corner.
In second place in the early standings, Mike, we see Toyama, but they tasted defeat for the first time this season, didn't they, at the weekend, losing 2-1 away at Miyazaki. And we should probably shine more light on Miyazaki for this one, their first ever win at the J2 level. And it was an excellent performance from Miyazaki, who outplayed Toyama for the majority of the game. Miyazaki went in front with a penalty in the 20th minute here. Ryosuke Maeda was brought down by the Toyama defender Junya Imase, and Kosuke Fujioka emphatically dispatched the spot kick. So Miyazaki 1-0 up early on, and it was 2-0 just before half time. Yuhei Tokunaga with a half volley from a very wide position out on the right flank. Judging by his reaction when the ball swirled over the Toyama goalkeeper Yohei Nishibe for 2-0, I don't think he meant it. I think he might have been trying to just cross the ball into the penalty area, but if he did mean it, yeah, it was fantastic. Well, it was fantastic anyway, but yeah, kind of an unusual goal, to say the least. Miyazaki created many more chances, didn't they? Kaito Umeda could have had a hat-trick. He had a good chance in the first half and two more in the second period. Toyama, who were missing their key man in midfield, Sho Hanai, for this game, did pull a goal back with about 12 minutes left. The Miyazaki defender Ko Watahiki miscued a clearance, and it went straight to Hiria Sueki, who rifled it in to give the visitors hope. But Miyazaki held on fairly comfortably to pick up a momentous 3 points. So yeah, 4 points from the opening three games for Miyazaki. Mike, I've been surprised by how good they've been so far. What about you?
Yeah, when you get a new team coming into a division for first time, it's always very difficult to get a sense of how competitive they're going to be. As we discussed in the pre-season pod, we noticed that the team which is coming into J3 is very much is pretty much identical to the team which performed well in the JFL last season. They haven't really added many new players at all. So yeah, you're sort of speculating at best, really, in terms of considering how they might fall. And the answer is that although the results have been rather mixed, their performances have been actually very consistent in quality. The first game against Iwate, they lost that 1-0, but it was a very narrow defeat. They were competitive. They created chances, and they had two or three players who were looking really good coming forward. In round two against Nagano, that's a tough game for their first away fixture in the league. And the coach Naruyuki Naito, he made some changes to the lineup. He pulled a new goalkeeper into the team. They changed the goalkeeper between the first and the second game. He played Shunsuke Ueda in the Nagano game. And one of the most impressive players from the Iwate game, Kenta Okuma, he switched him from an attacking midfield role to the left back, which was quite a striking change. The Nagano game was it was a tough one. They lived a bit dangerously after conceding early, but again they worked very hard. Ueda, the goalkeeper, looked good, as you've just described, John. Kaito Umeda, he's got a bit of a habit, an early season habit of missing chances, and he missed a penalty against Nagano, but late on he headed a deserved equaliser. They really didn't deserve to get a point from that. And in the round three game against Toyama, they were the better team. They deserved to win that game 2-1. And let's not forget, that was against a Toyama side who had won their opening two games. So I have a slightly different view of Tokunaga's winning goal. I think he absolutely meant it, and I think it was a peach. I think lovely technique, and the goalkeeper, Nishibe, absolutely no chance. It just sort of curls over Nishibe and underneath the bar. I think it's an absolutely beautiful piece of work, and definitely a highlight of the J3 season so far. I just mentioned Okuma, and he actually was very, very dangerous as a left back. He was getting forward a lot and good at playing the ball into the box. And so overall, it's been an absolutely great start by Miyazaki there. You know, they're competitive, they're hardworking, and to make that point again, they're pretty consistent, aren't they? And as we were discussing in the room, John, consistency as a characteristic of J3 teams, that's quite unusual in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we can talk about that probably with some other teams at the top end of the table who are not being that consistent at the moment. Toyama, you know, one of those. I thought they would have perhaps performed a bit better in this game because they'd won the first two. But yeah, Miyazaki, like you said, I think it was nip and tuck, wasn't it, in that first match against Iwate. They could have had a draw. They got a draw at Nagano in round two, but it could have been a win on another day. And I think they were much the better side in this game against Toyama. I know it finished 2-1, but I don't think that really tells the full story. If Miyazaki had put away all the chances that they had, I think they would have been out of sight long before that that late Toyama goal. So, I've been very impressed, and I think I had some worries going into the season that Miyazaki might be a side to get kind of cut adrift at the bottom, maybe. You know, stepping up to J3 might be something that was a bridge too far for a team that had finished, I think, you know, was it second in the JFL last season? But, those worries have proven to be unfounded so far. So, yeah, long may it continue. I think, we have teams like Ryukyu tearing it up in J2 at the top end, and Miyazaki more than holding their own after the first few games in J3. So it's fantastic. Yeah, great stuff. Mike, there were two goalless games at the weekend. The first one between Iwate and Nagano at Iwagin Stadium. We've got to, I think, tip our hats to the DAZN crew because they managed to extract kind of 5 minutes of highlights from what was a very drab game. I think Iwate kept Nagano at arm's length fairly comfortably, but almost nicked a winner themselves 5 minutes from the end. It was Morellato, substitute, who flashed a header just wide of the far post from a corner. But I think considering how poor the quality of their game was, I think a 0-0 draw was probably a fair result, and that leaves Iwate and Nagano with 5 points each from the opening three games. So I think Iwate will probably be very pleased with that, and Nagano maybe will find that an acceptable return, even if it's not 7 or 9. The other goalless draw was very, very different, wasn't it? At Mitsuzawa, YSCC got their first point of the season with a 0-0 draw against Kumamoto. YSCC on top really in the first half here. Charles Nduka hit the post for them on the half hour with probably their best chance. Kumamoto stepped up a gear and came more into the game after half time. The YSCC keeper Ryosuke Sagawa made a brilliant save to tip a shot from one of Kumamoto's many rookies, Naohiro Sugiyama, onto the post. The same player, Sugiyama, then hit the crossbar with a fierce effort shortly after that. At the other end of the pitch, following a goalmouth scramble, YSEC's Hayato Ikigaya fired a shot on target, but a Kumamoto defender, I couldn't quite see who, was able to react quickly and actually head the ball onto the crossbar and away to safety. So plenty of excitement. And there was even drama right at the end in the last minute of stoppage time. Sugiyama again involved for Kumamoto. He went racing clean through on goal, only for YSEC's Kei Munechika to professionally foul him. Denial of goal scoring opportunity, straight red card, the correct decision, and fortunately for the home side, the resulting free kick came to nothing. So a fairly breathless second half meters out, but that finished 0-0 as well. Kumamoto are another side on 5 points, along with Nagano and Iwate. So any comments on these goalless games from the weekend, Mike?
Well, the first thing to say is that as pairs of 0-0 draws go, John, they're about as different could be, aren't they? The Iwate against Nagano game. Wow, that was very, very tough going, wasn't it? a really, really poor game. I think that overall, though, Iwate can be very pleased with their start of the season. I sort of picked them as being perhaps the best of the lower half of the table teams, or the team with the best chance of perhaps progressing above halfway in the table. I think they're going in a pretty decent direction. With the first game against Miyazaki, that was they won that 1-0 as you described. It was a hard fought game against a determined opponent that but pretty deserved. Round two, away to Tottori, they drew that one 1-1, and they probably came closer to winning that game than did Tottori. You know, that's a good result for a team like Iwate. Against Nagano, yeah, they really held Nagano at arm's length, and that Morellato header just near the end was about the closest the game came to a goal. Let's notice that Yutaka Akita had, by that stage of the game, brought on Paul Bismarck Tabinas as a substitute for his debut. He is indeed the younger brother of Jefferson Tabinas, who's just moved to Mito. I think that Iwate probably look a bit more of an attack-minded team than 2 goals in 3 games would suggest. I think that they really are showing signs of development as a team. Nagano are to my mind not really showing signs of development. I think that they after a good professional win against Sanuki in the first round, they reverted to kind of flaky type. In the next 2 games, I would say picking up a draw against Miyazaki, I think they're going to have to be disappointed with that. They did bring Hidetaka Kanazono on as a substitute in the Iwate game, so perhaps he's coming into fitness. I think he'll turn out to be an important player for them this season. With the YSCC Kumamoto game, that you've given a very good description of the main pieces of action. It's got something for everybody apart from people who really like goals, but it's just amazing and definitely something to look out for in the highlights, and just when you think that it has had everything apart from goals, you get this stunningly cynical professional foul by Munechika in injury time, and he takes away the legs of Sugiyama just as he's about to enter into the penalty area. So, it's great fun. I think with YSCC, they are, they look as chaotic to me as they did last year. There are sort of flashes of quality that you get, including from the 3 guys who've come into the team, Kanda, Charles Nduka, and Kawabe. But, overall, they feel pretty unchanged to me. And I think with Kumamoto, they've got to five points, haven't they? Hayato Asakawa looks like being their kind of star man. Particularly in the absence of Takahashi, who is injured. But you made a point earlier, John, about inconsistency, and that this applies to lots of the teams. And I think that we're not really seeing any signs that Kumamoto at the moment are going to be able to kind of break the back of that.
Yeah, no, all good points. I think the jury is still out on Kumamoto, isn't it? I think for YSCC, yeah, I think perhaps they do look quite good up front. I think the Charles Nduka has a searing pace, which is going to catch a few central defenders out this season. But yes, at the back, yes, I can't think of a better word than chaotic to describe them. So yeah, perhaps we that game could easily have been 3-3, couldn't it, by the end? So madness. Okay, yeah, Mike, all good analysis so far. We'll take a short comfort break now to regroup, and then we'll come back. We'll discuss the rest of the round three action from J3 and look ahead to the round four games coming up this weekend as well. J-Talk Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. I think Mike and I have had a quick comfort break and we're refreshed. Mike, we'll move on and round up the rest of the J3 games from the weekend. Just in general, home teams were very much on top, weren't they, over the weekend? I think of the seven matches, was there five home wins and two draws, I think. So we've got three more home wins to talk about. Let's start with Imabari, who were up and running and got their first points of 2021 by beating Tottori fairly comfortably in the end, 2-0 at home. Imabari took the lead in this game in fairly unusual circumstances. In the 32nd minute, their captain for the day, Keishi Kusumi, sent a low cross into the penalty area, and I think he was looking for the rookie forward Seigo Takei, but the ball evaded everybody, including the goalkeeper, and ended up just nestling in the far corner of the net for 1-0. And Imabari always seemed in control of this game, didn't they? They added a critical second goal about 60 minutes from full time after a quick one-touch flowing counter-attack. Takafumi Yamada crossed for Take, and he volleyed home from about 6 yards. A first J-League goal for him, I think only his third appearance. I think he's a rookie this year, isn't he? So yeah, good win for Imabari there off the mark, but a mixed start for Tottori. Kind of not symmetrical. What's perfectly balanced? That's a good word for that. One win, one draw, and one loss from the three rounds so far. So what did you make of this game, Mike?
I think that it was a really important game for Imabari. They've had a really difficult start to their season, and I think that for the coach Luis Planaguma, he really needed something like this to kind of rally the troops. The in round one and round two, they've both had narrow 1-0 defeats in both of those games, and I think that, you know, they can consider themselves a little bit unlucky. Certainly in the round two game, that was at Numazu, they were the better side in that game. The Numazu goalkeeper made several very good saves on his J League debut. So they haven't really got the points that their performances really would have. Perhaps deserved from the first two games, and I think, you know, to come out of that with 0 points must have been a little bit dispiriting, particularly on the back of their injury list. I mean, but the very sad news about Leo Mineiro is the sixth injury in their first team squad. So, you know, it's obviously very, very tough going for them at the moment. But this was a much, much sort of stronger performance and very much a deserved win. And as you've said, a first ever pro goal for this a new kind of rookie forward, Seigo Takei. When it comes to Tottori, we have to make this point about consistency or inconsistency, don't we, John? It's so difficult to see which direction so many of these teams might go in. So in round one, Tottori came from behind to win 3-2 at Kagoshima. It was a really dramatic game, really, really exciting game. And they had Yuya Taguchi really as a starring role in that game. And I waxed pretty lyrical about him on J-Talk Short Corner. And then in round two, as I've mentioned earlier, they drew against at home to Iwate, and they were a little bit lucky even to get a draw in that game. Taguchi was introduced into the starting lineup and was completely anonymous in that game. And in this match against Imamari, they were comfortably seen off by a determined home team. So as with Kumamoto and Nagano as two examples that when we could give more, will the real Tottori please stand up? I think it's very unclear how things might go for them.
Yeah, and nobody seems to be sure if they want to get promoted or not at the moment, do they? It's definitely there's a few kind of contenders who have wobbled a little bit over the opening few games. I think the point you make about Imabari's injury list is a very good one. I think it was really important for them to show that they could win and score goals without Leo Mineiro and also without any other new attackers coming in. I know they have the new the guy from Guinea-Bissau is coming soon. I think also quite close to the game they lost they had another injury to the goalkeeper, didn't they? Tomohito Shugo, he was out injured for this game, and I think Okada played instead. So yeah, having to change the goalkeeper at the last minute was another obstacle that they overcame pretty well. By the same score, 2-0, Kagoshima beat Fukushima in the Shima United derby at Shiranami. It was a busy afternoon for Rei Yonezawa of Kagoshima, who ended up scoring twice after missing a first half penalty. Fukushima did have some early chances though, didn't they? Ismaila headed over when he should really have hit the target, and then the visitors, Fukushima, did have the ball in the net in the 10th minute, but this was disallowed for an offside. It looked marginal to me. There was no replay provided in the highlights package that I watched on DAZN, which is usually a telltale sign that it was a wrong decision, or at least a debatable one. So Fukushima perhaps a bit unlucky not to be in front. The penalty came in the 26th minute. Junya Nodake was brought down by Hirokazu Usami inside the box, but Yonezawa managed to send the spot kick wide of the right-hand post, so it was 0-0 at the break. Both Kagoshima's goals came in the space of 4 minutes right at the start of the second half, though. First of all, a big and basic long ball from the Kagoshima goalkeeper Shogo Onishi ran all the way through to Yonezawa, who was able to advance into the penalty area unchallenged and slot home. That was in the 47th minute. Now, you say Kayanuma could have doubled the lead just moments later, but headed over when he should probably have done better. But just 2 minutes after that, in the 51st minute, Kayanuma played in Yonezawa, who somehow was all alone on the left-hand side of the penalty area, and he had time to pick his spot and fire in Kagoshima's second. Fukushima did try to rally, didn't they? Ismaila was wasteful again when he went clean through on goal with about 10 minutes left. He shot straight at Onishi when he had virtually the whole of the goal to aim at. It was one of those chances where the player had too much time to think about what he wanted to do with the ball, I think. So Kagoshima, very entertaining game, beating Fukushima 2-0. Any thoughts on this game, Mike?
I build this one on short corner as Ismaila against Wesley Rodriguez, but in fact, the two kind of squared up not at all. And really, if you wanted to kind of make it into an individual contest, then you'd have to say that it was Ismaila against Rei Yonezawa. And there's only one winner there, isn't there? I found Ismaila's performance really, really disappointing. Not only because he kind of missed chances, but just because in the second half, as Fukushima were trying to come in back into the game, as you just described, John, he just seemed to me to be quite sort of petulant, particularly after he missed that one-on-one chance, or he'd had that saved. There was another opportunity whereby he had the ball on the left-hand side, but there were probably three or perhaps four, even four of his teammates were advancing towards the Kagoshima penalty area, but he elected to take a shot.
I know exactly the chance that you mean, and I actually threw my hands up in the air when I saw that in exasperation.
It felt like immaturity to me, whereas with Yonezawa, have I gone mad, or did he miss a penalty in this game?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, in the first half, yeah.
My brain is a bit overloaded with this stuff, but yeah. And he's a player that Kagoshima rely on. He was their top scorer last season, in a way comparable to the way that Fukushima rely on Ismaila. But he missed the penalty. He put it wide. It wasn't a save. But from that, he's dusted himself down and scored very confidently, two goals right at the start of the second half, and he's won the game for his team. And Ismaila has definitely not done that. It would have been quite a long journey back to Fukushima, I would imagine, for him and for his teammates. I thought that was really unimpressive. A bit more broadly, with Kagoshima, at the moment, it feels like they haven't really changed very much under Arthur Pappas. The defence is still the problem. A better team could easily have scored against them. That's really got to be the sort of area of focus for Arthur Pappas. Fukushima have had a bit of a sort of a tempestuous closed season and early part of 2021 with injuries and transfers. But again, I'm going to use the word chaotic to describe some of their defensive play so far. What have they got? They've got they've won one, drawn one, and lost one as well, haven't they? The win against YSCC, they did actually show some good attacking play. There was Hiroshi Yoshinaga and Yuta Nobe, who I thought both looked pretty good. But yeah, but Ismaila, even in that one, he's a young guy. There's a lot of pressure on him. But I can remember at the end of the season review pods at the end of last year, John, I remember we were sort of like talking about him as maybe somebody who might move to a bigger team.
I think my issue with Ismaila is similar. Me personally, I have no problem with young players making mistakes, like for example the chance that you mentioned where he took a sort of unconvincing shot from the edge of the penalty area when he should have played in a teammate. I'm fine with younger players making that mistake once or twice, but I want to see them learn from it quickly. Whereas I think Ismaila his weak point has been like getting headers on target, you know, last season. And I haven't seen this season that he's made any improvement in that area. He's still more often than not in the right position. His movement's very good and very intelligent, but his decision making is not good, and his finishing is very erratic. So you can kind of see the reason he's such an interesting player, I think, is that you can see exactly the attributes that would move him up to a higher level in the J League. You know, you can see where he's a J2 level player, but you can also see exactly, or often in the same passage of play, you can see the reasons why he's not in J2 yet. And I think he does have, I think this is a big season for him because he's a young player, but it's not his first season. It's not his first rodeo, you know, leading the line for a team. So yeah, I'm interested to see if he can make improvements to his game this year. I think just in general, Fukushima so far have been poor at game management and have made poor decisions collectively, not just Ismaila up front, but at the back. I mean, in this game, okay, they conceded the goal in the 47th minute. My team that I coach in my head at all times would have immediately kind of tightened up and made sure just to get through the next 10 minutes without letting in another goal. But they immediately gave up a free header to Kayanuma. That should have been 2-0. That was just seconds after they'd conceded. And then 2 minutes after that, the guy that had scored the first goal was just totally open, in the penalty area, just the keeper to beat. So I think just game management and decision making in general has been poor from Fukushima in a few games already. The only other thing I would mention about them before we move on is that Kaito Yamamoto, the new goalkeeper, he is very quickly got that resigned look about him when he picks the ball out of the net. I don't know if you noticed that he was very slowly picking the ball out of the net for the second goal in this game, and he almost already has that air of like, here we go again, which was perfected by Akira Fantini last season. So I was very big on them changing goalkeepers because I thought that would help out at the back, but possibly I was blinded by that, and I think it might be the defenders in front of the keeper that might need the most help. I don't know, but good win for Kagoshima in the circumstances. Quite an exciting game, wasn't it? One more game for us to talk about, Mike, from the round three card. It came in Hachinohe, their home opener for 2021, as it was for a couple of the northern teams, the Tohoku teams, wasn't it? And Hachinohe got their first win of the season, 1-0 against Numazu. The key moment in this game came in the 33rd minute when Taichi Nakamura headed home a right-wing cross from Kazuya Niwa to make it 1-0. I think, based on the highlights, Hachinohe were good value for their win. It seemed Yosuke Kamigata, their kind of a big target man striker, almost got a second goal for them, but his effort was blocked by Numazu's young goalkeeper Ryusuke Otomo. At the other end, the Hachinohe goalkeeper Takuji Yokoyama made a smart stop from Ryoma Kita. It might have been interesting if that ball had gone into net, because Kita looked suspiciously offside to me when he took the shot. But in the end, yeah, Hachinohe winning 1-0, good performance and a well-deserved win overall. What did you think of Hachinohe's performance in this game?
I think that they certainly deserved to win the game. I thought that Numazu looked really pretty poor. They've only played two games, so it's quite difficult to, or it's a bit more difficult to judge how Numazu are getting along. With Hachinohe, I mean, we talked at length in the sort of previews about how kind of like what their expectations can realistically be. And I think that they've done okay so far. They got that draw at Gifu on the opening day, which was pretty poor game all round. They played quite a bit better, but lost narrowly at Toyama in the second round. And then, as we've just said, they deservedly won this game against Numazu. They had a fair few chances with Kamigata probably should have got a goal. I don't think that they have very much sort of movement up front. I dare say I might even use the word intensity is something which they don't have very much of. And you can perhaps see why they struggle to score a little bit. With Numazu, they won 1-0 against Imamari in round two, having had a bye in round one. They were a bit lucky, I think, beating Imamari. And I would say that the new goalkeeper, Ryusuke Otomo, he looks like their kind of star player. He was pretty impressive in this game against Hachinohe as well, I thought. And also, they've got a guy who's playing at right back on loan from Verdi. That's Tetsuya Anzai. And he seems to offer them something going forward as well. I think that with the sort of Hachinohe game, am I being a bit mean, John, when I say that a better team than Hachinohe might have given Numazu quite a beating? What did you think about that?
No, I think that's right. I think Hachinohe, I think, did their best and huffed and puffed to try and get a second goal. And I think if they had done, they might have gone on and got a third. Numazu just don't really have anything kind of too inspiring going on up front, do they? They're very kind of flat, you know, and there's not really anything, I don't think, to get excited about. I think Ryo Watanabe, the guy that's in charge, you know, leading line up front, I think he's a really good player, but he's often quite isolated and has to do quite a lot by himself. So, yes, I think Numazu can probably, they're probably fortunate they weren't up against Gifu, in the rain at Nagaragawa, because I think the scoreline could have been quite different. But I think as 1-0 home wins go, this was pretty comfortable for Hachinohe, wasn't it? But I agree with you. I think a more clinical side, or if we're being honest, a better side would probably have put them away quite comfortably. And I think I don't really see Numazu doing anything this season in the top half of the table. They might pick up one or two surprise wins, or shock some of the more serious promotion contenders in a game here and there. But I don't think there's much to get excited about. Is there? Unfortunately, I hope I'm proved wrong, obviously. But based on what I've seen so far and what we talked about in pre-season, yeah, Numazu, I think not a great deal to write home about. Before we finish the pod, let's take a look at the round four games coming up this weekend. Just one game on Saturday, April the 3rd, but I think it looks like quite a good one, with Iwate hosting Imabari. The rest of the games are on Sunday. We have Numazu against YSCC, Toyama hosting Fukushima, Tottori against the leaders Gifu, which could be a good match, Sanuki against Fujieda, Nagano hosting Hachinohe, Kumamoto against Miyazaki, a Kyushu derby. And obviously Miyazaki, for them, that'll be the first time to have that kind of Kyushu derby in J3. That could be good too. I'm doing mental, can't just counting. Kagoshima have the bye, don't they, Mike, if they don't have a game this game? Yeah. So which of the fixtures from round four you were most looking forward to?
There's some belters here, aren't there, John? Let's have a look at the bottom of the table first. You know, I think then there are two really big games involving teams lower down the table, and that's there's Numazu against YSCC. I think, you know, that has the feeling of a bit of a 6-pointer for me. And it'll be interesting to see how Numazu, who are a, let's call them quite a conservative team. It's not necessarily that they're, you wouldn't say that they're kind of like disorganized, really. How they match up against YSCC, where you're kind of like you're never really sure what you're going to get, and you know there's the possibility that YSCC could sort of really stretch Numazu, but you know you've got kind of no real idea. And then there's Seneki against Fujieda, and that's really the first opportunity to see how Seneki kind of match up against a team that isn't, you know, potentially a promotion chaser, really, with due respect to Fujieda. I think that's a very important game for Seneki, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on with that one. As you say, we've got the Kyushu Derby, Kumamoto against Miyazaki, and this opportunity to test our theory around the idea that Miyazaki might be quite a consistent kind of outfit. Would it be a stretch, John, to say that Miyazaki seem to have just a little bit of a whiff of Akita about them? What do you think about that?
I think it's an interesting idea. They're a bit more, from what I've seen so far, they're a little bit more expansive in terms of the football that they play. But definitely there's the potential for them to work up a real head of steam. I think I might go one, you know, I think you've gone you've gone to a high-end boutique, but if I was to kind of bring it to a kind of pound shop level, Mike, for the British listeners, I think maybe Sagamihara might be a closer bet. In terms of Miyazaki, I could see going on like a long unbeaten run potentially, and maybe kind of forcing themselves up the table that way. I don't know. Do you think they could do an Akita and kind of blow past everybody up the table, or don't know, how are you feeling?
No, I wasn't trying to say that I think that Miyazaki can do that. I was just trying to make a parallel in terms of, you know, the importance of the level of organisation and the sort of work sort of ethic that Miyazaki, early evidence would suggest that they bring to their games.
Oh, in that case, in that case, I'm fully on board. Yes, I also think they don't panic when they go a goal down. From what I've seen, which is another important quality. You know, they don't fade like Saniki do, for example.
So I think that's going to be a really, really interesting match. And I think probably also I would say maybe Nagano against Hachinohe, on the basis that Hachinohe seem to have, as I mentioned, they've given a pretty good account of themselves, bearing in mind, the sort of like the difficulties that they face in terms of, their ability to, just to run a club. They're one of the very smallest clubs in the division. You know, Nagano 2 weeks ago, they were drawing at home to Miyazaki. And I wonder, you know, how Nagano will face that. This sort of game feels to me like the sort of game that Nagano, they really need to win that game. They really need to win that game. And they don't respond very well to that kind of pressure.
I think that Nagano game will be interesting if depending on how long it stays at 0-0, because it's quite a nervy place, isn't it? And the fans get nervous, and the that'll be transmitted to the players. I think if Nagano produce the same kind of performance they did away at Iwate, you know, from the weekend, which was pretty uninspiring, and if Hachinohe play the way they did against Numazu, so you know, if it goes with form, I think Hachinohe could be asking Nagano some difficult questions in that game, to be honest. I mean, I think Nagano have got the better team and the better squad, but just the way that they're playing at the moment, I think Hachinohe could make things a little bit uncomfortable for them. Yeah, I agree with you. I also think that there's just the one game on Saturday, but Iwate against Ima Barry. I think Iwate have also been quietly going about their business so far. And I think there's more to come from them. I think at some point they might show us a little bit more, and it could be against Ima Barry. But again, Ima Barry, we know, again, a well-organised team. So that could be an interesting clash. And Tottori against Gifu. I suppose if Gifu win that game, that would be three straight wins and almost certain to keep them on top of the table. So that would top off a really good first month of the season for them, wouldn't it, if they can win away at Tottori.
Yeah, and also it would raise quite a few questions about Tottori and their start to the season. It is a big game. It's an interesting game. This is one of the things about J3, isn't it, John? You can look at the fixture list, and in its own quiet way, there's interest wherever you look. I noticed that you asked me which of the games I was looking forward to seeing. And I didn't mention Tottori against Gifu in my list, and those are the two teams that I picked to be promoted this year, because there's a lot to see, and there's a lot to enjoy about J3. Yeah,
good points. I think it's early on in the season as well, so we kind of don't know yet which are the key games, right? I think we might only look back on round four later, and we'll see in the fullness of time which games were key games at the time. And also, what I'm enjoying about the kind of smaller division of 15 teams is there does seem to be a bit more riding on each game, because there are fewer chances for teams to kind of, or there will be fewer chances for teams to kind of rescue themselves when they make mistakes and they drop points. So I'm looking forward to it too. I think it'll be another good round, and I hope the listeners will hear you kind of wrapping it up for them in a J-Talk short corner when normal service is resumed next week. But thanks for joining me, Mike. It is appreciated, of course. And thanks to the listeners for joining us as well. We appreciate that too. And if you're a Patreon supporter of the J-Talk podcast, we really value that support. So thank you for that as well. But please keep listening. New episodes will be coming, or a new episode will be coming next week, with a J2 and J3 focus as well. But I think that's all for this bonus show. So we'll leave it there for this week. Enjoy your football, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.